Sports Line on WBAL, and we're joined now by one of my favorite all-time Orioles Hall of Famer, Ken Singleton. Ken, how are you?
Brett, how are you? Nice to talk to you again.
I'm doing very well. Well, let's talk about your former skipper who passed away, of course, last Friday night or Saturday. And to me, when I think of Earl Weaver, I think what most people think about is clearly his arguments with umpires, borderline belligerence. I think that belligerence is a fair word to describe it, but to me, I hope people remember a brilliant strategist and tactician, or really, and someone who's ahead of his time. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, I think it is, and certainly he knew how to put a baseball team together. He knew that, I think that one thing that Earl looked at, he looked at what players could do as opposed to what a lot of people do is look what players can't do. And I think he used his team to the utmost in putting guys in the position to come through and get the job done. He knew that somebody like a Terry Crowley was great off the bench and one of the best pinch hitters in baseball history, and that's why he was on the team. When the situations came for a player who was became to be known as the King of Swing, Terry Crowley, he would come through in the clutch and get some big hits. He platooned with John Lowenstein and John Renick in left field to the point that one year I think they combined for close to 40 home runs. He just knew his players and knew what they could do, and it was I wouldn't say it exactly was a pleasure to play for him because he could make it tough on you if you screwed up. He wasn't afraid to yell at you in front of the whole team. But we knew, you know, I appreciate Earl more now than I did then because he was able to get the best out of his players.
I reference this stat a lot and just this fact that you let off from time to time or a good amount based not on your speed, obviously, and your you know, ability to steal bases, but because you walked close to 100 times or 100 times often. Your career OBP was near 400 long before sabermetrics or Bill James or Brad Pitt or Michael Lewis. Actually, I thought Dan Duquette had a pretty good line this week, and he called him the godfather of sabermetrics. I thought that was pretty fitting.
Wow, it is pretty fitting because I can recall when I got traded from Montreal to the Orioles, Earl called me in the office in spring training, and he said, you're going to lead off. And I said, well, Earl, I don't steal bases. He said, that's not what I'm talking about. He says, you walk a lot. Bobby Grinch walks a lot. You'll bat first. He'll bat second. I walked 118 times my first year with the Orioles. That's still the team record. And my first time up in the American League in Detroit, I remember it to this day. It was freezing cold. I walked on four pitches, and I scored on a three-run homer by Lee May in his first at-bat in the American League. And when I got to the dugout, you know, I scored the first run of the season. Earl was there, and he said, that's what I'm talking about. And, yeah, I went on to walk 117 more times that year. And I hit 300 on the nose, but I think my on-base percentage was over 40%, and that's what Earl wanted.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Your OPS that year was 869. Your OBP was 415. Not a bad year, Ken.
Yeah, it was all right. I think I got a raise after that year.
But no, seriously, take us back to that time in baseball. How unorthodox was it for a guy, a power hitter really, like Ken Singleton, to lead off? How unconventional was that school of thought?
It was different. It wasn't my best home run year. I was just getting used to the American League. But I think Wirl, in that regard, was ahead of his time. As far he knew, he liked players who ran deep counts, were willing to walk, get on base, and could hit home runs. And from that point on, my role changed. I dropped down in the order the next few years, and I began to hit a few more home runs. But also, I maintained the ability to get on base. You know, I never lost that ability throughout my career. And I think that's what Earl appreciated about it. He didn't look at the fact that, you know, I wasn't going to steal any bases during the course of the season. He knew that I was going to get on base close to 40% of the time and create the opportunity for what he liked best, which was a three-run home run.
Ken Singleton with us here on WBAL. The essence of that line, I think fans say it nowadays almost tongue-in-cheek, and it's kind of cliche. Well, let's play for the three-run homer. But that is the essence, I think, of if Billy Beane or before that Bill James and any of these other guys accomplished anything or uncovered anything, it was that very idea, especially in today's version of the American League, that outs are precious and they should be valued. And that is the idea, if correct me if I'm wrong, of the three-run homer, of that line from Earl Weaver.
Well, that's true because we didn't steal very often. We didn't have a hit-and-run sign on the team. We didn't bunt very often. Earl thought the outs were precious. You shouldn't give them away. And he felt that if somebody could walk, a couple guys get on base. If you could combine that ability with your offense, to hit home runs and have the good pitching, the classic pitching that the Orioles had through the years and the supreme defense that they had. Earl did not tolerate defensive mistakes. He could see an error or something, but if you threw to the wrong base or missed the cutoff man, he was in your face when you came back to the bench. You know, the whole idea was to keep the double play in order, and he's trying to get two outs on one pitch as they're having opponents throwing the ball over the field and giving us extra at-bats and extra chances to score. And he felt defense should be tight. Pitching was very good. It usually was with the Orioles. And the ability of somebody to get up there and hit a home run late in the ball game, like an Eddie Murray or Cal Ripken, that was going to be the difference. And while the 10 years I was with the Orioles, we won 903 regular season games, more than anybody in baseball.
That's amazing. So do you think Earl Weaver today, do you think he can make it as a manager in today's world? And I mean the media, the fans, the things he said, the things he shouldn't have said, maybe doing live podium sessions before and after every game. Would it have worked? Would he have adapted with today's millionaire professionals?
I think because of the salaries they're paying managers now, I think he definitely would adapt, but he couldn't do it the way he did then. I think there was a little bit more power in the manager's hands as far as the players were concerned. He could threaten players more. I can recall one night Dennis Martinez was screwing up in Milwaukee, walking people, and he sent Ray Miller out to the mound. Ray Miller was a pitching coach for people who are too young to remember. And he told him to tell Dennis this: if he does not get the next hitter out, he will be in Rochester in the morning. And that is where the Orioles had their AAA. And Dennis not only got the next guy out, he completed the game, went on to win it. You know, he just snapped back together, got everything together. And after the game was over, Earl was walking around the clubhouse with a big smile on his face saying, it worked. You know, so not that you needed that much to get Dennis going, because Dennis was a pretty good pitcher.
All right, Ken, you come to Baltimore in 1975. Earl Weaver was already established, already has a championship and a couple of pennants. At that point, what did you think you were getting into? Did it meet your expectations? Were you concerned coming to Baltimore based on whatever the legend was?
No, I will tell you this story, Brett, and not many people know this. The night before I was traded to the Baltimore Orioles, I was out with Mike Torres in Montreal. And the Orioles, the night before, had traded for LeMay. And we said, oh, man, the Orioles, they got a great team. Now they got LeMay. Well, my phone rings about 6 o'clock in the morning, and it's Mike. He's on the phone. And he says, Ken, I got news. And I said, what do you mean, Mike? What do you call me 6 o'clock in the morning? He says, I got traded to the Orioles. And I said, oh, man, you're so lucky. We were just talking about them last night. LeMay last night, now you. And he says, no, you don't understand. You're going with me. And I said, nobody's called me. He says, when you hang up the phone, it's going to ring within 5 or 10 minutes. And the general manager, Jim Fanning, called in about 5 minutes and told me I've been traded to Baltimore, and I already knew it. And I was happy. And when I got to the spring training, the first person I saw was Brooks Robinson. He put his arm around me and said, you don't have to do it all by yourself here. We have a very good team. And when I walked into the clubhouse and I looked around, there's Mark Belanger and Bobby Gritch and Paul Blair, Tommy Davis, Jim Palmer, Grant Jackson, L. Rod Hendricks, Andy Etchebarren was there that year, of course, Brooks. And it was just a great team. And when I looked around the clubhouse, I said, you know, he's right. This is a place I'd like to stay to the end of my career. That's exactly what happened.
Ken, do you mind hanging through a quick break? I have a couple more questions. I want to ask you about the last day of the 1982 season and then coming back with the new manager. I really appreciate it. Hang on real quick. We're coming back with Ken Singleton on BAL.